the Sisters Minor of Mary Immaculate, founded by Mother Maria Elisabetta Patrizi, August 14, 1983. There have been allegations of abuse within the convent walls. Former members of the SMMI allege that they faced physical, emotional abuse, strict rules, food restrictions, and they have likened their experience to that of a cult. These are their stories, in their words. Hello and welcome to this week's episode of The Cult of SMMI. I am your host, Scott Mort. I hope that you are having a good week. I wasn't sure I was going to get this episode out today. I am in a bit of a state of emergency, but as always, I am making things work the best that I can. Before we get started, I need to get a little bit of legalese out of the way. The views and experiences expressed by our podcast guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the opinions of the host or the podcast network. While we strive to provide a platform for diverse perspectives, and engaging conversations, it is important to note that the experiences shared by our guests cannot be independently verified. Listeners should exercise critical thinking and consider these stories as personal anecdotes rather than established facts. There is no way to definitively refute or verify the claims made by our guests. The hosts and the podcast network are not responsible for any statements made by the guests during the course of the show. Listeners are encouraged to form their own judgments and seek additional information if desired. And now, Georgiana. Okay. So she's asking you to do some pretty odd things. And odd as in illegal odd, or odd as just in this makes no sense odd?
Well, Sister Teresa had a different vision of life after all my discerning since I've been home. I don't know what she thought obedience meant, but everything in a Franciscan community, as much as possible, is supposed to be donated. So I was not only the bookkeeper, but then I got to be the beggar because, oh, we had money, but we didn't spend it. Mm-hmm. We had to go to stores and beg. We went to all kinds of benefactors, and we would beg. And I, when I say beg, I mean it's like, you know, well, we really need this. Can you help us out? And I'd have to go to the store, and I'd go on the day that deliveries were made. And then I'd have to talk to all the vendors. Oh, hey, you know, can we get some bread from you? Well, you know, we don't care if it's a day old, 2 days old. We'll take it. And I come home with a lot of groceries, most of them free, mm-hmm. but, you know, certain things we would have to buy, you know, but it was, I had a budget and I could only spend X amount, and I had to try to get all the things for that amount of money. And I'll tell you, as far as supernatural on the plus side goes, I must have had God looking out for me constantly, because I would get to the checkout 9 times out of 10, and I'd be short because, you know, she said, but you have to get this, this, and this. And, you know, I'd find the cheapest variety and the smallest whatever of it, and somebody behind me or somebody that just checked out in front of me said, oh, hey, you know what? I'll get that for you, sister. I was like, ooh, thank you.
Yeah.
My high. Literally. But there were times when, like flowers, we would have always had flowers in the chapel, and she would say, Well, I think we're just going to have to, you know, like we do with the food, we'll go and we'll beg. So there were a couple of florists who basically wanted to hide when they saw me coming because they knew what I was in there for. And I'd say, you know, we'd like to see if there's, you know, have any flowers that you can spare, things that, you know, you don't feel are good enough to put in a bouquet. You know, would you mind donating some for our chapel? Because it's not for us. You know, it's for Jesus and the chapel. Well, again, fortune favors the bold, apparently, because a lot of people were very gracious. But if we didn't have the graciousness of somebody, let's say, or maybe we weren't in an area where we could go begging, for whatever reason, because Sister Teresa always had excuses about everything. I remember at least one time directly, and I know there were more times than this, but we were in Three Rivers and we needed flowers. And Sister goes, oh, let's go for a walk. And I thought, well, I don't know how that's going to solve the flower issue, but all right, you know, to get out of the actual convent and take a walk was a rare occasion. So we were all over it. And we walked down past the cemetery and Sister goes, oh, let's go walk through the cemetery and pray for the departed. So off we went, we're traipsing through and she's like, oh, look, flowers. And she starts taking flowers off of graves.
Oh my.
Oh yeah. And I look at the other sisters and they're looking at me and we're like, I don't think we're supposed to be doing this. Oh, they don't care. You know, these people are gone and this was just from the, you know, the funeral home and it's not a big deal. They're just going to throw them away anyway. And I thought, as much as, you know, that's probably the rational way to think of it, you're still taking flowers from somebody's grave. But she had a penchant for that. You know, that was, if she saw somebody get buried, and every time, at least out east, they would take all the flowers from the funeral home and they would put it on the grave. So, yeah, that was a place we got flowers more times than I care to say. And then there were other things that she would want us to beg for. Like I had one of the cars had a flat tire and she said, well, go down to this shop and beg. Now, mind you, we had the money for it, but she wasn't going to pay for it. She's like, just go down and beg for it. I'm like, all right. So I would go down. And so the whole thing ended up, it's all about obedience. But see, this wasn't really against anything. It was an act of faith. But I always thought it was a little unnecessary because we could afford the different things that she was asking me to beg for.
Well, I think too, and this is just me speaking for myself, I would, if there was money there and I was being asked to beg for stuff, to me that feels like theft. That feels like stealing to me.
Yeah.
You know, you can say you take flowers from the grave. They're not being given willingly. You're stealing from the dead. If you go down, can you please do this? If you've got money in your pocket and you're begging, and I'm not talking like, oh, I've got $5 in my pocket. You know, I can see wanting to hold on to that. But if you've got a cache of money, to me personally, that feels like stealing.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, and then every house could only have a certain amount of money. Because, again, everything went to Mother. And when anybody made final vows, like I'd said previously, they weaseled everything out of you. I mean, I had had cancer in my novitiate and almost died. And they the doctor came to the house and he took me himself because they were not going to seek care for me. And he said, I don't care. This is morally wrong. You can't refuse this person medical attention. And she's on death's door. So when the doctor took me to the hospital and said, you know, this is how we're going to do things, they were like, well, but we can't afford this. And it was a Catholic hospital. And the Catholic hospital, because I was a religious, donated it all. But because, again, I had the cancer, a lot of things moved forward faster. I think I remember Patricia saying she didn't make a full year of her novitiate, and neither did I, and neither did Anne, and neither did Carrie, and neither did so many others, because they wanted money. And then she'd go out and buy who knows what, more cars for here, another house here. She went to a cemetery in a place somewhere in Connecticut, I don't remember where, a place where we had never lived, and bought up a huge square in a cemetery and had a huge statue of the Blessed Mother erected and all this fancy stuff. And no sister ever was buried there because none of them died here because they all left. The ones that were sick enough knew that they were never going to get the care that they needed, and they just moved on. They're like, yeah, I'm going to leave because, you know, I'm not getting the care that I need. And that poor sister that Sister Patricia mentioned in Italy, Sister Roberta, she had lung cancer. And they made me go out and sit there for a week and watch her suffer because they're like, this is how you handle suffering that is given to you. You bear it patiently, and, you know, if you die, you die. And this sister did pass away. And, yes, she did not get to see her parents. And it was horrifying. I'm like, I sat there day after day and heard that sister scream and cry and saw her writhing in pain. And, you know, I was the bad guy there because I was cancer-free at that point. And I thought, wow, I hope nobody ever gets sick because apparently this is the way it's going to go now. Because I had an emergency surgery, now everybody else has to suffer. And I thought, what kind of faith tells a person to treat others that way? I mean, every other order I've ever known went out of their way to care for the sick. And I'm like, this is not anything close to the teachings of Jesus or the teachings of the church, because God healed. If he saw somebody that, I mean, he healed everywhere he went, no matter what the case was, no matter, well, he even raised people from the dead, obviously. So there are so many, there was no limit to his mercy and his forgiveness and his love for all humanity. He wanted people to be taken care of. And so this never made sense to me. And then some sisters who, again, with the superiors, who were always superiors from the time I got there till the time I left, they would get treatment. If they needed, if they even had a cough or a sneeze, they would get treatment immediately. They would get medication. But anybody else? No. They just had to leave if they wanted to get well. There were numerous sisters who were sick and had to leave, or not had to leave, left because that was the only way they were going to get help. There was a sister from France, Sister Regine, and they had worked her so hard, and they had broken her down so badly that she left because they asked her to leave. She went home, got therapy, was healed, in my opinion, probably miraculously, and she wanted to come back to the community. And I thought, I wonder what prompted her to want to do that. I wonder if they had some kind of hold on her. Mm. Because she came back and she got sick again. And I remember I was staying in Rome at the time, and the sister who was constantly rude with me was also very rude with her. And she wouldn't. She'd, everything I need to do, I'll do it. No matter what, you just tell me, I'll do it. And we're most of us that way. Although there were some who would deny obedience, she and I were two that would constantly do what we were asked. She ended up having to leave again because she almost died a second time. So that kind of treatment of people just blew my mind. I couldn't imagine. I couldn't wrap my head around what were they thinking? What precipitated this cruelty? It was scary. And you were more or less trying to survive. And when I never doubted when people left why they left. And so many left so many different ways. Most of them were escapees, as Patricia had said, and you would probably hear from others the same thing, that people would help them, because in the places where the sisters were, people saw what was going on. It was not, it wasn't a secret like they thought it was. People would come up to me all the time and say, "Does she always treat you like that? Does she always speak to you that way?" I said, "Pretty much." Yeah. They're like, "What is wrong with them?" And I said, "Well, you know, superiors have a lot on their plate." I would always try to defend them. Even if I knew there was nothing really pressing on them, I tried to defend them because we were a community. You were supposed to stand up for them. But it got very difficult. The more mistreatment you saw and the more mistreatment you received, it was very difficult. But as another explanation for some people as to why I stayed, I had suffered abuse at home. My father was extremely abusive, and I just knew that if I needed to go on in life, I just needed to survive and go forward, survive and go forward, because it's all I knew. So the convent was nothing new to me as far as poor treatment. But I was always very cautious about, especially the younger ones that would come in. I would mostly be kept away from them because they were afraid I'd tell them the truth. They were afraid that I'd say, "Well, you know, you might want to be careful if you have any health issues, because they won't be taken care of." In fact, that was another thing. When I made my final vows, they said, "Well, if you intend to get any medical care going forward, you better believe you're going to be paying for it. So you better just give us the whole inheritance." But then they make you write a letter saying you were donating it of your own free will. And she would stand over me, Sister Teresa, and basically tell me what to write and say, "And then you sign this, and then I'll sign this, and then it's a deal." I'm like, wow.
I dealt with a ton of paperwork today, paperwork is so confusing. Did it seem like somebody taught Sister Kovacs how to do this? Or do you think this was just innate in her?
I think there was probably a little bit of both. I think she had some difficulties in her young life. I don't know what they were, but it was kind of, to me, apparent that something wasn't the way it should be. And I know that Mother General was very hard on her in the postulancy, novitiate, first vows. But I think she had kind of made some kind of deal with her at some point. To, you know, as long as you let me do what I need to do, I'll make sure things, you know, work over here in the United States, because Sister Teresa was always in charge of all the sisters in the United States.
Thank you for joining us once again here on the Cult of SMMI. If you, a family member, a friend, what have you, were a member of the Sisters Minor of Mary Immaculate and would like to speak about it, whether to refute or verify the claims of our guests, please reach out to me at strangepathwaysmail@gmail.com. Once again, from the bottom of my heart, thank you for being here this week. Take care of yourselves and each other.